I'm Dan Rodericks, and this is Midday. Following up on yesterday's conversation about crime in Baltimore with Mayor Stephanie Rawlings Blake, we hear today from Police Commissioner Anthony Batts. He has a plan to refocus the police department's efforts on so-called enforcement zones, bringing aggressive policing to areas of the city with a history of violence. The mayor spoke about it yesterday. We get more details from the commissioner today. Criminologists and public health researchers consulted on this revamped plan for enforcement zones. That's also the case with the city's plan to bring Operation Ceasefire to Baltimore. We'll speak with David Kennedy, the criminologist whose ceasefire concepts have led to reductions in gun violence in other cities. First, the news. Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Midday on WYPR. Dan Rodericks here. Thanks again for joining us and making Midday part of your day. Yesterday, Baltimore Mayor Stephanie Rawlings Blake was on our show talking about her new crime strategies, one of them putting Operation Ceasefire in place here, one of the few things that the mayor had proposed in her State of the City address on Monday. We're going to talk about Operation Ceasefire in this hour. In case you don't know about it, you'll learn about it during this hour of the show, and we'll get a chance to talk about it with Police Commissioner of Baltimore, Anthony Batts. So continuing our conversation about crime in Baltimore in this hour of midday today. Unlike many American cities that have experienced drastic declines in recent years, Baltimore's homicide rate has gone up again. After achieving a decade's low homicide total only 3 years ago, and the rise in homicides here last year came as other cities with chronic violent crime showed decreases, and that includes New Orleans, Detroit, Cleveland, and Oakland. So Commissioner Batts will be with us in just a few minutes to talk about some of the new strategies that are going into place in Baltimore in order to combat violent crime. At the top of the show, however, we want to talk about Operation Ceasefire, and we've invited to the show, and lucky to get a few minutes today, with David Kennedy, who is the architect of Operation Ceasefire, a set of crime-fighting strategies developed a couple of decades ago and credited with significant reductions in serious crime. David Kennedy is the director of the Center for Crime Prevention and Control at the John Jay College of Criminal Justice in New York City. He's also co-chair of the National Network for Safe Communities. Nice to have you with us, David Kennedy.
Hey, Dan, and hi, Tony.
Commissioner Batts here is here in the studio with us, so I should say, Anthony Batts, thank you for being with us today.
Absolutely,
Commissioner.
Sir.
I wanted to spend a few minutes with David Kennedy just to go over Operation Ceasefire for people who don't know much about it. I think it would be good just to talk about this very narrow and strategic plan that's in place when Operation Ceasefire goes into place. It's a pretty comprehensive plan. We've seen elements of it in Baltimore over the years. But I wonder if you could describe it for us, David.
Yeah, describing it actually doesn't take very much. It's a lot of work, but the basics are really surprisingly simple. In Baltimore and everywhere else, it turns out, that has the kind of violence we're talking about, it is driven on the street by exceptionally active criminal offenders who operate in groups. They're in gangs, drug crews, neighborhood sets, that kind of thing. And what Ceasefire does is put together a law enforcement city community partnership. It figures out ways to speak directly to those groups face to face. And it says to them, we know who you are. We know what you're doing. Your community hates the violence and needs it to stop. Your community and your city and your police care about you and respect you and want you alive and out of prison. We will help you if you let us, and if you continue to be violent, we will follow the violence back to the groups, and we will look at any and all crimes anybody in the group may be committing, and we will pay very careful attention to those crimes. And if you want that kind of attention on your group, let somebody you run with kill somebody. Most of the cities you mentioned at the top of the hour are actually using this approach, and one of the most noteworthy is Oakland. So Oakland began this when Commissioner Batts was police chief in Oakland. They have hit their stride. they saw a 29% reduction in homicide this past year.
David, am I correct? You consulted the city of Baltimore, the police department, once about crime-fighting strategies, including ceasefire. And I'm talking about, what, 10 to 15 years ago?
About 15 years ago.
Yeah. So am I correct? There were elements of ceasefire kind of put in place. It doesn't work unless you do the whole thing, go all the way with it.
You can actually go quite a long way with half measures. And part of what's really promising about Baltimore is that in various ways, at various times, all of the key parties have used these ideas. These are not new ideas anymore. You know, 20 years ago, this stuff was radical, but it's not anymore. The commissioner will tell you this is just, you know, nearly standard practice in good police departments now. You know, my home department of New York City is doing this these days. And so the U.S. Attorney's Office has done a lot of this. The state attorney's office has done a lot. The Baltimore Police Department has done a lot. And we're very optimistic that we can pull all of that together and get really, really good results out of it.
And one last thing, David, in terms of resources, manpower, budget, cost of putting something like this in place, and as I say, going all the way with it, making it fully comprehensive, and even some half measures, Can the Baltimore City Police Department sort of transition from what it's been doing to more Operation Ceasefire in targeted areas to without breaking the budget, so to speak?
Yes, yeah, it can. And I make my operational partners, like the commissioner, mad at me when I say this, and I'm probably about to do it again. Everybody wants more resources, and I want more resources for the cities that I work with. So let's be really clear about that. But this is not primarily about new money, new officers, new technology. It is primarily a matter of executive commitment to doing the work. And where that commitment is there, good police departments can figure out ways to move resources around and make this happen. We've been highlighting an operation out of South Philadelphia, which has been doing this work fully operationally since April. They have gotten tremendous results, and with really about 12 street officers who know exactly what they're doing and are extremely street savvy, they have pretty much managed to put the fear into all of the gangs operating in South Philadelphia. And some of what they're doing is really, really unexpected. So if you want to say to these guys, if you put a body on the ground, there are going to be consequences. What everybody thinks about is Fed time and RICO and that kind of thing. What they've figured out in South Philadelphia, and you can do this at the line level, lots of the guys who are in these groups are living in homes where they're pirating their power and their cable. That's illegal. So when there's a shooting out of one of these groups, the Philadelphia Police Department is working with utilities and shutting them down. So the message on the street is, you shoot today, tomorrow you're sitting in the dark listening to AM radio. And it's so fast, it's so predictable that people are responding to that.
How interesting. David, thank you very much for your time. I hope we'll get a chance to talk again.
Hope so, too.
Yep.
Thanks
David,
a lot.
Yeah, thank you. David Kennedy, professor at John Jay College of Criminal Justice in New York City, director of the Center for Crime Prevention and Control, has been consulting the mayor of Baltimore, Police Commissioner Anthony Batts, about bringing Operation Ceasefire fully into Baltimore City. So, Commissioner Batts, thanks for sitting by patiently there. Our main guest for the hour on midday today, you can call in, 410-662-8780 is our number. So, Operation Ceasefire, someone listening to this, a taxpayer, is listening to this and thinking, why haven't we done this before? Or what are we doing now? How is Operation Ceasefire so different from what we're doing now? Could you explain that for folks?
Well, on two different levels. David talked about how they're doing it in the city of Oakland. When I came in the city of Oakland, they were doing it, but they weren't doing it correctly. There wasn't a mandate for it. It wasn't collaboration, buy-in. And so the dysfunction caused more dysfunction because it wasn't done properly. Mm. What I did is reconnected, started all over. And as I walked out of the door, we had a foundation to do it the right way through David's Foundation and the people on the West Coast that are connected to him. Here in Baltimore, we've done it over the last couple of years again. I don't think we did it correctly. I think that we were missing pieces. We didn't have all the partners to the table. We didn't have collaboration. And when you're talking to a criminal element and you're standing in front of them, and they know if you BS or not. And so when you're standing there and you either given threats or you're given promises that you cannot follow up on, and then when the crime does happen or crimes do happen and that ruler doesn't come out and they get popped or some action does not take place, then you're a toothless tiger and you don't get those things done. So what we're doing now is going back to the drawing board and doing it correctly with all the collaborations, all the partners, all the follow through that it's going to take to make this happen, that you're just not going to do it half. Partially.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to do it completely and buy in. The mayor has taken on that program. She's running it out of her office, and that shows how important it is to her and to the city. She has a out of the mayor's office of criminal justice is where that's housed, and there's been a gentleman that's been identified to pull all city resources together to coordinate this to make sure that it follows through.
Would the federal authorities be involved with it? She mentioned the DEA yesterday, the mayor did.
Yeah, I have talked to all the SACs in the area. And had asked them to make sure that they're the SACs, being special agents in charge. I'm sorry,
it's all right.
For the acronym, but for the FBI, DEA, ATF, and all our partners that we collaborate to together. We also have a meeting that was scheduled, actually, I believe, for this week, but it had to be canceled, that we're coming up either next week or the following week where we're sitting down and honing it in. Rod Rosenstein, the U.S. attorney, and I have been blackberrying back and forth over the last week on the same subject matter. So we're sitting down and we're going to craft out as we move forward.
I mentioned to the mayor yesterday that some years ago, I forget how long ago it was, maybe 4 or 5 years ago, I think Commissioner Bielefeld was in place. There was a meeting held as part of what seemed like Operation Ceasefire. I don't know what it was called, but it was held at the Western District Police Station. Men who were on parole or probation were brought. There was a gathering there. They were told, what the point of the meeting was, is to basically warn them what the consequences were of committing another crime or being caught with a gun in that neighborhood. And I thought it was pretty effective. That's the kind of thing that goes on under Operation Ceasefire.
Well, the big thing is, number one, is that you come out of being anonymous, number one. That if you're a person out there that's conducting crime within our city, we bring you in and we identify, we know who you are. We're turning a light on you. We're saying that we know who you are, your parole agent, your probation agent, and that all these federal partners that are sitting here and the special agents in charge, they now know who you are. And we understand your history, your background, where you live, where you work, if you're working, where you're hanging out, where your girlfriend's house are. We know all these things. And if there's issues that take place, we're not just dealing with the individual. We're dealing with the organized crew, gang, drug core that's taking place and putting pressure on all of them. And so it's just not one. If one of you guys messes up, we're going to get all 50 of you or all 25 or all 30 of you.
Police Commissioner Anthony Batts of Baltimore, our guest in this hour of midday on WYPR. We're going to take a short break here. We'll come back. We'll take phone calls from our listeners if you have comments or questions for the commissioner about crime in Baltimore City. When we get back, I'm going to ask him about what was announced yesterday, sort of reshuffling the deck a little bit on these enforcement zones in Baltimore, revamping and expanding them. 410-662-8780 is the midday phone number. Our email address, midday@wypr.org. And welcome back to Midday. Dan Rodericks here with the Police Commissioner of Baltimore, Anthony Batts, 410-662-8780. As I said, Mayor Stephanie Rawlings-Blake was on the show yesterday, Commissioner. She stopped here after being at 28th Street and Hugo Avenue with you yesterday morning to make this announcement about enforcement zones in Baltimore City. I think the citizens would like to know about this.
Sure. What we're talking about is, and as David said, when you're talking about ceasefire, concepts are nationwide as a whole. And then you take them and you build them upon what you do specifically to the uniqueness of your particular city. We spend a lot of time in international associations of chiefs of police as meetings, as we talk about strategies that work in other places, don't work in other places. We spend a tremendous amount of time in major city chiefs, which are the largest 65 largest police departments and cities within a nation, and we talk about what works, that doesn't work, and our experiences, and then we kind of tailor them. We've been doing, in the 1990s, there's a concept, and I'll be short at this, 1990s, there's a concept called hotspot policing. Hotspot policing went kind of evolved to zone policing. What the organization has been doing over the last 5 or 6 years is zone policing. We just had four zones. They were called VCIT zones, violent crime impact zones. And what you're doing there is you're identifying through empirical data what are the parts of the city that are most problematic to the city, where we have a cluster of criminals, we have a cluster of probationers, parolees, gang members, crime overall, and it seems to attract, and it and people of the same ilk attract each other. So you may have drug houses, drug locations in those areas. So you look at that through empirical data, and your statistics can show you and point out where those areas are. And we standardized those zones in four places over the last 5 or 6 years. We had Johns Hopkins monitor what the police organization was doing there and the results of it. And what it showed is that that was one of our best strategies that worked very well within the city. So what we are doing, much like other agencies, are taking that concept and expanding it. We go to every district and we ask every district, where's your most problematic area that has drugs, crime, prostitution, shootings, people losing their lives? Where is this impacting? What's that region? What's that area? And we standardize the square mileage of those areas in every district. We go back and do longevity research. We go back 10 years, 5 years, 1 year. And fortunately or unfortunately, a lot of the crime in Baltimore has been in the same places for a long period of time. And there's a reason for that. There's either people who live in there. There's either families. There's either a reason why people can get in and out. And what we look at is what's the reason that that stays in that area 5, 10 years later. So we build the zone and we start looking at addressing a lot of influence with our probation department, our parole department, focusing on with the police officers and the strategies, really rooting out the criminals that are there, and not just dealing with the symptomology, but dealing with the causative effects that are taking place, why that's staying there, and trying to address what type of calls. We look at the top 10 calls that are coming up in that area. We look at the most violent gangs that are in that area. We look at the violent repeat offenders in that area. We look at any abusers that are in that area. So we're really deconstructing why the issues are taking place, and we're going after it very aggressively to take the people out.
Okay, so go after them to take them out. I mean, you have to wait till they commit a crime, or what?
We're not.
I understand this concept that, yeah, you know, there's a disproportionate amount of violence in Baltimore committed by a small interrelated group of people who all are in the same zip codes, it seems
like. And we're not being reactionary. We're being proactive. Part of this process, which also connects to what we were just talking about,
ceasefire. Yeah.
Is that you bring people from out behind under the shelves. We put a light on them, and we kind of say, we know who you are. Part of the process is that we've identified and we've crafted a letter that we go out to these people and we go to their doors and knock on their doors and say, hey, we know who you are. We're paying attention to you, and just understand, if you can you continue the violence in this city, in this area, this is what's happening. And we pay visits to them. We talk to them. We stay on top of them, and we don't let them get away.
So, Commissioner, we had these zones in place in Baltimore City, but you've revamped or reconfigured them, or there will be more of them?
No, we haven't revamped. We still have the original four that has been here for 5 or 6 years, which has been the concept that has worked. And we've expanded them to a minimum of one in each district. So we have 9 districts, so we have a minimum of one. Some districts have 2. And there again, we may have had the 4 original ones and then expanded to another zone in that same district. So some zones have 2, most have 1.
410-662-8780 is our phone number here. This is going to allow officers to focus on specific areas. And citizens listening to this might worry, well, what about the mugging that occurs sporadically in another part of town that's not in one of these enforcement zones?
That doesn't mean that we're taking every resource of that district and just focusing on that zone. That zone has intense focus and analysis to it, but we don't drop other places of the area. What I've seen a lot of time in my history is that where you have pockets of people that have criminality, it spreads out. it impacts the region around you. There's been times where I've shut down specific apartment buildings, complexes, housing projects, and then a crime within like a 2-square-mile radius drops off dramatically. And that's the impact. They venture out, they commit crimes, come back to their location.
I wanted to ask you about January. Then we're going to take some calls. January was a bloody month in Baltimore, as you well know. And I asked the mayor about this yesterday, whether she had gotten from you any insight as to what was going on there, why this spike in homicides in the first month of the year. Is there any connection among all those killings? Do we know any more about them?
We had one particular incident where the person, for lack of a better word, ended up committing suicide and killing himself. But we connected him to a minimum of four and potentially more shootings that this particular serial shooter, killer, if you would take it, had committed a number of incidents. What we're trying to do now is forensically go back and look at how many other cases that we think this guy is tied into. There was a shooting in the southwest of at a grocery store where two grocery store workers inside, a male and a female, this guy comes in and takes the human life, just shoots him for no reason. He didn't have to. He just did that. He shot another young man in the head in early morning hours before he shot himself, as we had him in a barricade of suspects situation. But we think he may be connected to a number of others. We had in the first two or three days of the month, we had two double incidents that took place. People shot in cars. Part of that information, as I was sharing, is that what we're starting to see in a pattern recently is because we're putting so much emphasis on open-air drug markets, taking them off and arresting them. You can see in October, November, December, search warrants that we were doing at 4 a.m. in the morning, that's making an impact on the organized drug market, the gangs that were out there. So they've changed their tactic, and what they're doing with people now is if you have a client who wants to buy drugs, whatever that drug is, could be heroin, could be marijuana, and whatever it is, they're giving them a phone number and saying, call me here. And so people are calling them, and then the bad guys are saying, meet me in a far-off location, and I'm going to do a drug deal with you. Now, you're meeting a criminal who not only makes his living through drug sales, but from robberies and other things. So these people are meeting him in far-off locations in cars, and they're getting robbed, and they're getting shot, too, at the same time. So we had a couple of those that were taking places. So we're putting those connections together. When we put our plan, which is not just the zones, but the multifaceted plan, criminal plan that we're going online right now, we put it in effect about the third week of January. The violence in the city subsided for us for the most part. We had a couple shootings over the last 2 days, but within a 2.5-week period, we only had three homicides in that city, in our city. And one of those homicides was from 1980. The man just succumbed. We had another one where the youth this weekend was at a club on the block. And a third one, we think it may potentially have been a domestic.
And just one last thing, Commissioner. Overall, some folks have a hard time accepting that violent crime is down in Baltimore because we put so much focus on homicides.
Mm-hmm.
Overall, aggravated assault, armed robbery, what else? Non-fatal shootings, where are we on all
basically
that?
Basically, every category that you have mentioned that deals with Part 1 crime is down within the city. It continues to be down. And I don't tout that so much anymore, but you're less likely to be a victim of burglary. You're less likely to be a victim of rape. You're less likely to be a victim of car theft, et cetera, et cetera. But people don't feel that. And if you don't feel it, you can tell them stats all day long. They don't care. It doesn't have the perception. So part of what we have to do, number one thing is what I have to do, is that I have to put the strategy together that we drop that homicide rate, period, bottom line. And until we drop that homicide rate, no one else is going to listen to anything else that we say. So the entire focus on the organization is open and honest, is that we get that, we hear that, and that's what's going to be our focus. The rest of the stuff, after we get the homicide rate down, we'll continue with the other pieces. We'll start talking about that when we get this down. Until then, we're not even addressing that till our city feels safe.
You're listening to Midday on WYPR. Dan Rodericks here with the Police Commissioner of Baltimore City, Anthony Batts. You can reach us with a question at 410-662-8780. Commissioner, let's start with Robert in Baltimore, who has a question for you. Welcome to the show, Robert.
Hi, how are you doing? Thanks for having me.
Sure.
I'm hearing information about you starting a truancy curfew center where kids, I think just the mayor was talking about this, where the kids out of violation of curfew will be taken to a center and That'd be opportunity for career opportunity to people to change or give them alternatives. It sounds like, again, and I see the numbers of $1 billion for crime-fighting statistics. Why are we still doing a reactive? I think that would be reactive. Let's get this before they get to this truancy level. Let's reopen. Let's invest the money. Let's take those personnel that you're going to have in those current truancy locations and put them in, open these rec centers, give these kids a place to go within the rec centers, put those people with the opportunities to guide them further on and stop having the criminals receive that ammo, the ammo being those youth.
Okay.
And so
all right, Robert.
You cannot... Yes.
Let's hear from the commissioner. Thank you for your question. Yeah.
Robert, I think thank you for your very articulate question and insightful question. What we've been talking about until you came on the phone is dealing with the problem right now and those people who are victimizing our city and going after them aggressively and getting control of the perception within the city and get the homicide rate down. But as we take people off and arrest people and we send them to jail, they're going to be in jail, and that problem is going to go away as long as they are in jail. And so we're addressing that at that point. Part of the conversation, what he is saying, and I think this is part of what we talk about, is how do you stem the supply chain? How do you stop, as we take off 10 people off the corner, how do we stop 10 more people falling into their position? And so we can do this all day long, take people to jail. But his bigger question is, how do you stop that from continuing to happen year after year after year?
And echoed in this email from Ellen, who says, I served on the grand jury of Baltimore City in 2010. By number, most of the cases which came before us involved young men arrested for drug or violent crimes. It was heartbreaking to know that for most of them, their formative 20s would be spent inside a prison learning to be criminals. I believe intervention long before boys become young men would be beneficial. Prevention is far better than a cure. Let's take another call. Jerry in Baltimore County with a question for Commissioner Batts. Hi.
Hi, Dan. Hi, Commissioner.
Hi. Good morning, sir.
You know, Dan, you probably remember this, but the commissioner wasn't around at the time. But in the late 80s, 90s, I'd say, the Maryland State Police did a sweep on what's known as the Block, the adult entertainment section of the city. And my question is, with the crime as bad as this, why aren't the state police working side by side with the Baltimore City Police to stop these killings? And I'll take my reply off the air.
We work with the Maryland State Police every weekend. They're here with us sometimes Thursday, but every Friday and Saturday. We work in partnership, have been working in partnership for many years. Doing my tenure here for 16 months, they've been here every weekend. So I have a lot of praises going out to Colonel Marcus Brown, who is a good partner and good collaborator with us. So that is happening.
What do they help with, state troopers?
Their specialty is doing traffic enforcement and traffic control. Mm-hmm. So where we have very dangerous areas, what we're seeing is our guns are being transported in cars. And so where we have violations, serious violations, we're stopping and we're actually looking for guns that are in vehicles and taking guns away. And they have such a strong expertise in that. They work with our guys in the specific districts where we're having high crime and high violence.
Yesterday, the question of manpower came up in terms of the police force in Baltimore City and the recruitment that you need to do to bring more cadets into the system. A tweet here from one of our listeners says, Baltimore's resources are actually high. We have more officers per capita, than other cities. Don't we need to redo police districts? So, first of all, I don't know whether it's true we have more officers per capita or not. I don't know off the top of my head. But in terms of our, the manpower that you have to work with, are we short? And we need more officers, don't we?
I think as you look at cities with urban environments, the New Yorks, the Philadelphias, especially on the East Coast, if you compare East Coast to West Coast cities run, police departments run extremely thinner than East Coast cities do. Prime example, and I've shared this before, is in Southern California, when I was in charge of that police department down there, when I started, the ratio was 1.8 officers per 1,000 residents.
That was Long Beach?
Yeah, and when I left, it was about 2.4 per resident. on East Coast cities in comparison, and Oakland was even lower. I think it was closer to 1.2 or 1.0 per thousand. When you come to cities on the East Coast, New York, Chicago, they all have larger numbers. Baltimore falls right into that category as those very large cities. And I think we as a police department are about 4.0 per thousand in comparison. But when you take a closer look at that, it's not just that you have police officers. It's where are those police officers? There are those police officers all on the street. We have a very thin civilian staff, the support staff, that does a lot of clerical stuff that keeps they're the mortar that keeps the organization together. We have police officers in those functions, and those should be civilianized. So part of what I'm trying to do is get officers off those desks, and the mayor is in very strong support of this, and get more civilians into those positions and get those police officers out in the street. Now, I could say I agree with that statement. If we had that high ratio of police officers out in police cars, that would be the perfect thing, but we're not there yet. The city touts we have a lot of officers, but they're not all on the street.
And what about the shortage and recruitment for the academy?
We have put on a very heavy recruiting process over the last several months, pushing extremely hard to get larger numbers to come in. We had our attrition rate went up early part of last year. You could almost look at, if you take a look at where our recruitment dropped off, and it's not dropped off because we weren't out there doing it. People coming here dropped off. We had retirements that came in, so there was a gap that started. If you take a look at that gap and look at how our ability to respond to crime, you almost all see the patterns going the same way. What I do know and I do look at is putting more police officers on the street as a whole. And so what we're doing now is trying to do larger academies. But the point is getting qualified people to apply. We have to have competitive wages. We have to have competitive working conditions. And so we're working to fix those things, too. We're in negotiations with the FOP right now. And hopefully we walk out of there where we become more competitive to bring people here. We are seeing, and I encourage the listeners, if you have Baltimoreans who are interested in becoming police officers or out of work, please have them sign up because we want them, we need them, and we trust in them. I'm having a large number of recruits who are signing up are coming from New York, are coming from Pennsylvania, they're coming from New Jersey, and I want them to come from Baltimore, and I want them to come from Maryland. So if you have qualified people, please have them sign up because we're looking for them.
A note from Detective Robert Cherry, who is the president of the Baltimore City Fraternal Order of Police Lodge 3. He says the FOP agrees with the mayor that we need to negotiate a more flexible work schedule that puts more police officers in all areas of the city, not just the violent areas, and at the times of day when most calls for service occur. And we are committed to that. But remind her and your listeners that it was the FOP in our Blueprint for Improved Policing, published in July 2012, before their strategic plan, that called for new district sector boundaries and an emphasis on more officers being placed in uniform patrol. The FOP is committed to a safer Baltimore and will continue to offer our suggestions for doing just that. That's from Bob Cherry. A reference there to the strategic plan that came out last year, right?
Yes, it came out last year.
Yeah.
And Bob and I are in agreement with everything that he has said. They did put it in their blueprint, and I read that before I came to the city of Baltimore. They were very cutting edge as a union to put that out. Had a lot of good ideas that were out there, and they also took some positions that were labor because they are representatives, advocates for labor. The part of the strategic plan also takes some of the concepts that they have and our employees, and also addresses management issues that are out there to make the organization more efficient. But we're all on the same page, Bob and I, and the mayor. So we're in the same place.
Do you know what the homicide clearance rate is in Baltimore City? And clearance, I mean, I think we defined it in the Baltimore Sun as an arrest being made. Is that how it's defined?
Yeah, you could have it made by arrest, made by investigation, and then the other piece of that is the conviction rate too. As you clear, the national average, if I remember correctly, and I haven't checked it in about a year, is probably about 60%. Usually hovers at about 60% in clearance rate.
That means at least an arrest is made?
At least, yeah, has been made on that particular incident.
Okay, so...
And in Baltimore last year when we ended it, there's times we fluctuated. We went over 60, but at the norm, we hovered right below it at about 56, 57.
Okay. Because this tweet from one of our listeners, Melissa presumes that we have a very low homicide clearance rate, and I guess that's a subjective thing, what you consider low. Some people consider 80% low.
I think you have to go by the national average. What other police agencies are doing? Like I said, the last time I checked, it was about 60%. So that's the norm. Mm-hmm. I'd like to be over that, over 60%. My goal is to push for that, and I've made that clear within the organization. We hover right below it. I don't think we're out of the range of most police other police agencies. They usually hover a little below it, a little above it.
Police Commissioner Anthony Batts, our guest here on Midday. For the remainder of this hour, we'll take your calls and questions after a short break. The Midday email address, midday@wypr.org, and you can reach us by phone at 410-662-8780. Commissioner, there's a question here about the curfew centers. The mayor was on the show yesterday talking about curfew centers being part of the overall plan here. So there's one already in place. It's on Barclay, right? It's in Barclay. And the police use that. They take children there who are violating curfew. The mayor wants to expand this and have more of these centers, right?
Yes, that's what she said in her State of the City.
The two questions came up with, will this take time away from policing in Baltimore City because the police will have to be bringing children to this center now? Exactly what do you expect to happen in these curfew centers?
Well, I understand we have two different levels of our curfew here. You have daytime curfew where kids should be in school. I mean, that's just the bottom line. Kids should be in school and not walking around the streets. And one of the issues that we're having in one part of the city right now is just kids being out on the street at all times when they should be in school. And I think if you have a child who's out at 12 o'clock at night or 1 o'clock in the morning, that's a signal. That's a signal that family is in distress. Because most likely that child, if they're out at 1, 2 o'clock in the morning, they're not going to school. So that means that they're not their greatest hope is in school and getting a good education and graduating. So they're not in school. So if you need to grab a hold of that child and have wraparound services, and I think what the structure is going towards is identifying those kids, getting them back to school, get them into school, and identifying if they're in trouble. I know in other cities what I saw is a lot of the daytime burglary rates were tied to truancy. So if you had a lot of kids that were right out of school and they were walking up and down the street or alleys, crimes or opportunities, as they were walking, a window would be open. They would, not most kids, but the kids who were out along those lines would crawl into a window and break in and burglarize. And so it's really critical for us to get a hold of that daytime truancy rate, too. So that's what we're pushing for.
Yeah, I asked you this, I think, the last time you were on the air, and I wanted to ask you again. You've been on the job now in Baltimore a year and a half or so.
Yes, sir.
The biggest challenge you face in looking at Baltimore City from the sky for policing, you know, I wondered if you thought it was kind of amazing the way the city sprawls out in so many directions. It is a sprawling city full mm-hmm. of row houses, occupied and abandoned, much less population than the city was built for originally. And I just wonder, you know, physically, geographically, looking at the city, what kind of challenges that you saw there that you might not have seen in other places where you worked?
I think every city is unique. The first city I was at was, I think the city is about 55 square miles and a lot of very heavy in density, just under 500,000 people. So you had a smaller square mileage, but you had people on top of people, mm-hmm. which brought its own challenges. And here you have at Baltimore is that we have more vacancies and we're a little wider, but about 100,000 more people than where, you know, I started at. But, you know, the police officers here and the command staff has been doing this job in the city for a lot of years. We know the nuances. We know the ebbs and flows of the city and been policing the city for many years. And so I don't think it's anything different. It's unique because it's Baltimore. But it has the same issues that every other city has. You have other cities in the industrial belt that are dealing with vacancies. We're not the only city that's dealing with that, and we have to address that. You have a lot of cities that are losing populations. There's other urban cities that are doing the same thing. So you're just having a shift of America as a whole. Mm-hmm. But I think we're on the right path. I think the strategies that we have are on the right path, and I'm very confident in what we're doing. We went through a number of changes last year. We had to change based on because you can retire so early here in Baltimore, which is different for me. In where I came from on the West Coast, you can't retire until you're 50. Here you can retire when you're here on 20 years, which could be 41. It could be 40, 41, 42. So for me, that's very young. So you have the issue of people retiring very quickly. And so you have to bring people into positions quickly because they're leaving when they get to that stage. So because of retirements, we had to make a number of changes and bring new people into positions, get the plan down, get the philosophy down. And I'm very confident. I think we're going to move forward in the right direction.
But it sounds like we lost some brain power. We lost some experience last year.
I think not just last year. I think that happens in Baltimore every year. Mm. I think how the city has tried to deal with it is having a drop program that you keep people around. But when you can retire at 20 years, that means that you have to start promoting people then when they have like 15 years on. So you get at least 5 or 6 years out of them before they retire. And with that, I think 15 years on is still not enough time. But that's part of our system that we're built here, and it's been here for a long time. So there's other cities that are like that also. So that just means that you have to build a succession plan, and you have to build a good learning, training, leadership program. So when people step in, they're ready to take those positions.
I'm just curious: are officers leaving as soon as they can after 20 years, or do you have some that stay longer?
Our attrition rate right now has really been impacted with the officers who are on the first 5 or 6 years. And so we are competitive in salary for the first 5 years, and then we lose it at that point in time. And there's a huge gap between us and other agencies, and that's where you see people are leaving.
Okay. Let's go to the phone lines and take some more questions. Maureen in Baltimore, thank you for holding. You're on with Commissioner Betts. Maureen, we're ready for you.
All right. Hey, Commissioner. How are you?
Good morning, ma'am.
Hey, so I'll be brief. I just moved from the D.C. area, where we built a foundation board, and basically our job was to raise awareness, get the partners that you want to the table from the business community and the nonprofit community, and also help you raise funds for whatever you need. If you need money for these truancy centers, that kind of thing. Any thoughts about starting one?
Yes, ma'am. I've reconvened or started two prior. When I came to Baltimore, there was a foundation that was already in place. And I have to tell you, other places that I've been, I've had to scramble to get business communities to invest in a police organization. And the places that I was at, I was able to raise $200,000 over probably like 2 or 3 years of asking and getting people to get involved. And I was very thankful for that. I got to tell you, here in Baltimore, you have people who want to help. We have a foundation that's already here. I've asked for them to assist on a couple different things, and they've come up with big dollars at a drop of a hat. We needed to get what we call ballistic blankets, where if we have an active shooter, officers can get in close to the buildings to get into an active shooter. Those things, for me, are fairly pricey. I think there was about $100,000 that we needed. They gave it to us at a drop of a hat. We have the private industry where we have some of our stations are not too up to par where they should be. Southeast Station, for example, the business community in that community came out strong, put in pretty close to, I think, $300,000 to $400,000 to renovate that station and make it a state-of-the-art station. And there's many more things that they've done during my time here and before I came here. So we have a foundation that's extremely, extremely active, and we're very positive to them and very thankful for them. And Signal 13 is another subset that's out there that are very strong supporters of the police organization.
Following up on that, Tom in Mount Vernon will take your call. Welcome to Midday.
Good afternoon, fellas. And first of all, I'd like to thank Commissioner Batch for coming to Baltimore and welcome here.
Thank you very
much. But I've been telling my friends that this is a tough guy out of Oakland. And he knows Oakland. He's a tough cop.
Thank you, sir.
I think that some of the activity we've had with the shootings and whatever, it may be that Commissioner Batts has stirred the pot on these gangs here in Baltimore.
Mm-hmm.
And there could be retaliations back and forth and whatever. And I think this is an anomaly for right now. But also, Commissioner Batts, the other day in the Sun paper, sir, people were asking you about what tools you could use in the city. And you mentioned you'd like to have more of regulations that would help you to shut down unruly repeat violence clubs, et cetera. Could you elaborate on that, sir?
Well, I've just thrown an idea out there. We had and it's not just clubs, it's businesses, period. We just had a young person this weekend who was in a club. He was 17 years old. He was in the club, we believe, with another 19-year-old, and he ended up stabbed within in that facility. Number one, what is a 17-year-old and a 19-year-old doing in a strip club, first of all, when you have bouncers at the front door? Second of all, how do you bring a knife into a facility like that when you're supposed to be patting people down and not coming in with knives or tools like that? And so who should be held responsible for that is the business owners who have those businesses. And some of the issues that take place, whether it's stores where we have high congregation of bad element, or whether we have other businesses that impact the life and the quality of our neighborhood or of our city, we need to have those tools to hold them accountable very quickly, very efficiently.
Commissioner, a question from Kevin by email. Do you think we can continue to try to arrest our way out of the drug problem?
I think pretty clearly the most progressive police chiefs today are very clear on that. We can't arrest our way out. And we say it so much that it's become a cliche. But I think there's a second phase to that. If you can't arrest your way out, what's the next step that you need to do? I think it came up with the caller earlier, is that what do you have behind that? You know, if we're and there's times where we're going to have to arrest. There's just some violent people out there. There's just some violent people that take human life, and they shouldn't be out there, and they shouldn't exist out there. And those are the people we're aggressively going after, period, bottom line. Nothing to talk about there. But you have to stop these young kids before they get in that cycle, before they get in that system. We need to have pieces that are there, and that needs to be a conversation for our city, the city of Baltimore itself. How do you wrap around all those issues that stop them from adding to that supply chain? So they're not the people that we're taking off the street over and over again, 10 years from the day, 20 years from the day, 30 years from the day.
Commissioner, the enforcement zones we discussed earlier, the announcement that you made yesterday with the mayor, 17 enforcement zones, a little smaller than the four that we had. So do those go into place right away? Is this immediate?
We started, remember I was sharing with you that the violence dropped off for us
first two weeks of February.
The last week in January, going into the first 2 weeks of February. Mm-hmm. But part of what we were doing is that in the first part of January, we had to get the plan that was written in the hands of all of our supervisors. And so we had meetings where we called in the sergeants and lieutenants of this massive organization and got them to sit down to go over the vision, the plan, how it works, what they're expected to do. And so we're moving in that direction, and they're connecting. Part of one of the things that Bob Cherry said is that when you have those small zones and only certain officers are addressing it, that makes the rest of the police department, 98% of the police department, just answering calls for service. All those officers thought their job was to do is to go when Miss Jones gives a call that my car got broken into, go out there and take that report. They're not out there. They're crime fighters also. They have to be in the game. So what we're trying to build here is an organization that is engaged at all levels, not just 200 officers in zones, but the entire 3,000 police officers in this police department are engaged in the game, and they have responsibilities, and our supervisors have accountability for territory, and they have accountability for what takes place in that territory.
The other big piece that we discussed at the outset of the show when David Kennedy was with us, and then after that, is Operation Ceasefire. So in the coming year, we expect to see these zones put into place, these enforcement zones, and then a collaboration with the Coordinating Council on Operation Ceasefire?
That's just the tip of the iceberg. Those are just the big pieces that you're talking about. The zones, not being in a Pollyannish way, the zones are going to help us to do a better job at policing. Ceasefire is going to help us identify and put online the guys who are doing the crime that's out there. We have a more efficient organization. We're opening up a watch center, which is going to become a fusion center. We're going to have information to come in 24 hours a day. We're going to have an organization that moves faster. We're pushing the guys to get more intelligence to know what's going on the street. Retaliatory shootings, which drives a lot of our numbers within the city of Baltimore. The caller was very insightful when he talked about the gang issue, because we've identified one of the most violent gangs in the city. We've gone after them. We've destabilized the top. We have seen people trying to jockey to replace them in that position, which causes conflict also. So that's why we have to build this program that the entire city is on the same boat, going the same direction to see the same results. And that's part of what Ceasefire, better intelligent, faster moving organization, with some other pieces that we haven't talked about coming out of the health department too.
Well, okay, we'll come back and talk some more about this. Why don't we catch up in a couple of months, Commissioner, and get you back here on Midday. It's always nice to have you
visit. Guaranteed. Thank you,
sir. And we certainly wish you luck. Thank you very much. Commissioner Anthony Batts of the Baltimore Police Department has been our guest in this hour of Midday. Thank you very much again.
Yes,
and thank you, everyone, for tuning in. Stay tuned for the second hour of Midday, coming up after the news from NPR. We'll take a break here for lunch, brought to us on Wednesday for our guests by Breathe Bookstore Cafe, serving inspired vegetarian, vegan, gluten-free savories and sweets and more. Open 7 days a week at 810 West 36th Street. That's the Avenue in Hamden. More at breathebooks.com. A break here for the news from NPR, and then the second hour of our show.